Hi, this is Denise LaRosa, and you're listening to Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa, a podcast show created by a mom for moms. I do not take for granted that you have a lot on your plate, yet you are taking the time to listen to my show. I am truly grateful. Be sure to stay connected by visiting www.denisenlarosa.com, following me on Twitter at @DeniseNLaRosa, and liking my Facebook page, Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa. It is my hope that Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa will motivate, inspire, and inform you along your journey in motherhood. So let's dive in. So just how happy are you? According to a 2009 study entitled The Paradox of Declining Female Happiness, women in the United States have become less happy, both absolutely and relative to men. The study also revealed that the decline in women's happiness is a trend seen across groups, both working and stay-at-home moms, for those married and divorced, the young and old, and across the education spectrum. And these same trends appeared across industrialized countries for which there are sufficient happiness data. Mother and author Britt Raines dives deep into this topic in her book, An Amateur's Guide to the Pursuit of Happiness. Through a near-divorce experience, lots of therapy, and 10 months spent traveling around America in an RV with her husband and two kids, Britt Raines discovered what makes her happy. In An Amateur's Guide to the Pursuit of Happiness, she shares insight from that journey to help you carve out your own version of happiness. Laced with down-to-earth advice, personal stories, and irreverent humor, this book is ideal for people who, quite frankly, hate self-help books. I met Britt at the MomCon in Pittsburgh, and everything she had to say about mothers and happiness really resonated with me. She's a breath of fresh air, and her approach to happiness inspires me in my own pursuit. Take a listen to our candid mom talk about women's pursuit of happiness.
You were incredible at the MomCon. I just absolutely, I looked at your website, and the one quote literally took the words out of my mouth that you are a breath of fresh air. I was like, yes, someone who just puts it out there and just keeps it real. I just absolutely love what you do.
Aw, thank you. I told my dad once too, he was like, what do you do? My dad, basically, I give people permission all day long. That's pretty much what I do.
I love it.
All day long. No, that's fine.
Yeah, I love that though, Britt, because wouldn't you agree, us mothers, we are just always so hard on ourselves and so busy nurturing and caring for everybody else that we neglect our own sense of happiness a lot of time, trying to make up. And that was something that really resonated with me, in your book. But okay, let me just jump into it. Thank you for doing this interview. I can't thank you enough because I read your book and I am just so inspired by it. It's just something that is, like I said, it's a breath of fresh air. You're giving us permission to just keep it real and just address so many issues. And it was just like I kept turning the page and I'm like, okay, I'm not crazy. I feel that way too.
Thank you. Getting that, when I got your email saying basically that, I'm like, those emails just make my whole day. There is nothing better for a writer than to have somebody, say that their words hit them in some way, that it resonated or it was there's just nothing better for a writer. So thank you very much.
Oh, you got it. And thank you for giving us the gift of your life experience. And I guess I'll start off by asking you to tell us a little bit about your children and how they inspire you along your journey to happiness. And I love how you say it is, it's not like a destination, you get there and you're like, okay, I'm happy forever.
I have to remind myself of that when I'm having bad days and I'm like, I'm the worst happiness expert ever. I have two kids. My son Devin is 15. Well, he's turning 15 actually in tomorrow. So yay. And I would say that he inspired me to be a better person, right? When he was born, I felt very much like my job was to teach him how to be a good person. But 5 years later, when my daughter was born, I noticed a big shift in that I was very much aware that it was my job to show her how to be a good woman, a strong whatever it meant to be a good woman. It was my job to teach her how to be a woman. And I was really surprised by what a big deal that was to me, what a big shift, because my son and I were very, very, very close. We still are really close, but, he was my only child for 5 years. He's definitely a mama's boy. And we were really tight. But, man, when my daughter was born, I really felt like, oh, crap, this is serious now. There's something even more, you know, the stakes were higher, I guess I should say, the stakes were higher. And I became really aware of all of the expectations that the world would have for her. And so she, it was really important to me to prove to her that she didn't have to live up to all of those expectations and that she could be whoever she wanted to be. And she, I mean, right out of the gate, man, she started pushing back. You know, I mean, before the girl was verbal, she was making it very clear that she wouldn't wear pink and she wouldn't wear dresses. And, you know, I imagined having a girl, the first thing I did after the ultrasound is I went home and painted her. They tell you, I mean, we're pretty sure it's a girl. Don't go home and paint the nursery pink or anything. Not only did I go home and paint the nursery pink, I painted it pink on pink. Like, the wall was pink and the trim was a white shade of pink. And, you know, I was going to have this girly girl with beautiful gold ringlets and blah, blah, blah. And she was not that girl at all. And so right away I felt pretty protective of her and protective of her right to be whoever the heck she wanted to be. And that made me very much aware of the fact that I couldn't show her that unless I was going to be that, live that myself. You know, that the best way that I could show her that it was okay to be whoever the heck she wanted to be was if I learned how to be okay with being whoever the heck I wanted to be. So that's, you know, and obviously to this day, that's, I think kids, raising kids, all moms, it kind of makes you want to be a better person because someone is always watching. You know?
Yes. Yeah, I get that. And it's like amazing because I have little ones. I'm like on the opposite end of the spectrum here. I have a 2-year-old and a 6-month-old and they're watching. I mean, I think sometimes as adults, we kind of don't give them enough credit, but they are taking it all in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's scary once they start to, it's definitely, you know, parenting is a journey as much as happiness and anything else, and it definitely evolves. So I will give you this heads up. As they start to get verbal and talk and things, you will learn so much about yourself through your children and the things that they pick up from you, and, you know, the bad habits that they have, and you'll go, oh, crap, I do that. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, parenting is a very interesting journey of self-discovery.
Yes. Oh, my goodness, that's amazing. And you know what? It just makes me think of another element of being a mom, how we just go into this nurturing mode. And as mothers, we're always putting everyone's happiness and needs ahead of our own and doing everything we can do to make others happy. And you touched on something in your book that was really interesting along those lines. So how do you see this having a negative impact on our own individual pursuit of happiness and those around us?
Well, I want to, first of all, the way it affects others, specifically our kids, right? Because that's really who we start to take care of the most. You know, I know when my son was born, you know, or when I found out I was pregnant with him, I was like, okay, well, this is it. I am going to make sure that he does not ever suffer because of me, and I'm going to be the best mom I can be for him, and, you know, he will never, ever, ever have any regrets or resentment towards me at all. Ha, 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 ha. But, you know, so you're that's kind of right away, you think about how can I be a good mother to this baby, and you want your kids to be, when they're babies, you want them to be healthy, and then as soon as you see them, you want them to be happy. And unfortunately, while that's totally natural and normal, if we keep doing that, where our job is to make our kids happy, what happens is we kind of do them this huge disservice because what we're accidentally teaching them is that it's somebody else's job to make them happy. And more importantly, we're not teaching them how to make themselves happy. You know, I mean, if you always tie your kids' shoes for them, then they never, ever, ever learn how to tie their own shoes. You know, so you have to, yes, show them how to do it. But then at some point, you also have to step back and let them kind of fumble around with the laces themselves. And it's the same thing with happiness. So the biggest thing that happened, yeah, I think the biggest, one of the two biggest downfalls of this whole making other people happy is that we send our children out into the world with no greater wish than for them to be happy, but with no tools to do so.
More with Britt Rains after this brief message.
iMemories offers a host of media transfer and conversion services for videos, photos, negatives, and slides. Tools that make it easy for anyone to create professional-looking videos. And a premium online service that makes sharing your memories with friends and family easy. The box you send iMemories holds more than video cassettes, film reels, and pictures. It's full of irreplaceable images and memories. To keep them safe, iMemories engineered advanced technology and process to track every media asset through its entire life cycle at iMemories. iMemories also offers safe photo and video sharing in the cloud. Be sure to visit www.deniseinlarosa.com and click on the iMemories banner to enjoy some special rates on this priceless service. Preserve your memories today with iMemories.
And so what happens is they go out into the world and all of a sudden mom and dad aren't there to make them happy anymore, and they naturally start looking for other people to fill those roles. And you know, it makes it really hard to have good relationships with friends, with spouses, with whatever, because they're saddling these people with this job that they can never fulfill. So that, I think, is huge. It's also, as you alluded to, not good for us, because it's impossible to spend all of your time and energy trying to make other people happy and also making yourself happy. I mean, those two beliefs just don't coincide. Whenever I do talks, I always, with small groups, I'll say, who here is waiting for somebody else to make them happy? And nobody raises their hand, right? Because of course we're not doing that. We all know we're responsible for our own happiness. And then I say, okay, but who here spends a good chunk of their life trying to make other people happy? And everybody raises their hand because that's
impossible.
But it doesn't make sense logically that if nobody else is supposed to make you happy, then how are you supposed to make other people happy? Like, you either believe we're each responsible for our own happiness, or you believe we're all supposed to do it for somebody else.
Right.
And so, you know, we're left needing other people to take on that job. And the biggest problem with that is that no one else can do it like we can. You know, I used to think that it was super, super romantic. Like, my idea of romance was I would make my husband happy, he would make me happy, and the net result would be we were both happy. But that's kind of like, you know, trying to run a three-legged race through life, because it's just not very efficient. I am so much better at making me happy, and he is so much better at making him happy in the big ways, because I know my head, you know?
Right.
I know my own head. And nobody else can guess and know and, you know, figure out all of the nuances of my happiness like I can. So it doesn't make sense to have other people who can sort of do the job when I'm the best one for that job, you know?
Yes.
Well, that brings me to something that I guess I wasn't really planning on addressing, but, you know, what you're touching on is so important also for our relationships with our spouses or our spouse or our partner. And, you know, so what would you say is our role to our spouse as far as happiness goes?
I think that naturally when you love somebody, you want to see them be happy. But there's a big difference between supporting somebody else, supporting someone's journey and taking responsibility for it, you know? So it kind of comes back to this idea of seeing yourself as a support staff instead of the person in charge of that job. So, you know, I do little things that I know will add to my husband's happiness, or that I think generally will add to his happiness, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. And most importantly, I leave him in charge of, you know, delegating and asking and things like that for what he needs. So it's his responsibility to say to me, hey, I'd really like you to do this for me, or I really enjoy it when you do this, or, you know, I'm really feeling insecure right now. Can you just please tell me you think I'm big and strong and handsome? You know, it's his responsibility to identify those needs and reach out to me. But because I love him and I want to see him happy, when he does reach out, you know, as much as I possibly can, I try to, you know, help him get those needs met. But that's ultimately what it's all about, who's responsible, you know, who's the buck stops here person when it comes to the job of making someone happy.
I love that. And I've already been implementing that after reading your book in my own personal life, because just a little background on me, Britt. Yeah, it's incredible. Like, because a little background on me is that I was voted friendliest girl in high school. I was Miss Congeniality. Yes, I did pageants for a little bit. And and so I was like Miss Happy, you know, and it got to the point where, you know, I also have like this sense of humor. And I think in life, at some point, I felt like I was responsible for making people happy. You know, if they were mm-hmm. sad, I had to try to turn it around for them. And so I think what you're saying is just so, so important. It was an aha moment for me. And so I kind of have backed off, you know, I've taken on, I don't want to say backed off, but like you said, taking that role of being a supportive spouse or supportive friend or supportive daughter in the pursuit of happiness of those around me. And I've just noticed a big difference. Like, I don't feel so much responsibility. Like, it's a mm-hmm. huge weight lifted off my shoulders. And at the same time, I'm not nagging people, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, the resentment just, like, evaporates from a relationship. Because when you're not responsible, then you're not ticked off because they're not happy. You know, like, you're like, well,
right.
I hope that works out. I mean, you know, yes, you want them to be happy, but ultimately, it's not your butt on the line, you know, if you're thinking about
right.
it in terms of a job. So you can be more empathetic and compassionate and sympathetic instead of, you know, sometimes we find ourselves being resentful because why are you in a bad mood and I'm doing everything I can to make you happy and why aren't you, you know, doing your job of, you know, mm-hmm. being happy. And that's such a gift to give to the people in your life, right, to let them just
yes.
be however sometimes.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And that kind of makes me think again about how mothers are often so critical of themselves. We don't give ourselves the gift of, like you were saying, acknowledgement. Acknowledgement is the acceptance without judgment. We all
mm-hmm.
have flaws. One of my favorite quotes in the world, it's like on my website, is there is no perfect way to be a mother and a million ways to be a good one. And we put all of this pressure. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
And why do we do this to ourselves? We have these flaws. Of course, we're not perfect. But I love how you say we can acknowledge them because that's acceptance without judgment. Stop judging yourself as a mother and stop judging other moms. So, you
mm-hmm.
know, what are some steps we can take to fully be accepting of ourselves and those around us?
Well, the first thing I try to get people to do is to pay attention to their language. And I was actually seeing this even when you were talking, and you're like, oh, we all have flaws. But so many, even that, this idea of a flaw, right, it automatically sounds like it's something bad. But it doesn't have to be when you're describing something. You don't have to describe it as, oh, this is a flaw, as much as this is how I do it. It's not good or bad. This is just the way I do it. So the first thing I try to get people to do is to really start to kind of pay attention to their language and the way they talk about themselves and the way they talk about other people and the way they kind of think. And be on the lookout for words that inherently mean to have judgment attached to them. You know, good, bad, better, best, worst, you know, success, failure, that sort of thing. And just be on the lookout. And it doesn't mean that you never judge because, you know, our brains are wired to judge for a reason. But when you start to pay attention, you might see times when you're adding judgment to a situation that doesn't really need it, you know, and kind of get creative then with, okay, well, what's another way that I can describe what's happening here without judgment? You know, so like I said, if you hear yourself saying like, oh, well, I have this flaw. Well, okay, hang on. Is it a flaw or is it just, could you instead say, you know, yeah, so I don't really value this or I don't do this. This is how I, you know, I have this flaw of I'm so not a morning person or, you know, maybe just I'm not a morning person. You know, you don't
love
have
it.
To say it.
Before. Yes.
So definitely,
I love
definitely
that.
Pay attention to your language. And that's a practice, you know. The
mm-hmm.
other thing that really I have found makes the biggest long-term difference is the practice of meditation. And I always hesitate to say that because I think when I say the word meditation, women automatically imagine themselves sitting up cross-legged, eyes closed in a quiet space for 30 minutes, drawing a blank in their mind. And that's just not practical for so many mothers, you know?
Yeah.
But that's not what I mean. You know, meditation really, it's not about drawing a blank, and it certainly doesn't have to be 30 minutes. You can get the same benefits if you can find quiet for just 10 minutes a day, you know, and for 10 minutes, just focus on observing what is in your mind. And there's a lot of ways to do this. You can, you know, find guided meditation and things like that. But that practice, that daily practice of just for 10 minutes, really what you're doing is literally practicing acceptance. And it strengthens your acceptance muscle. I mean, that sounds really kind of crazy, but it does. And you'll find yourself more aware of, like, oh, here I'm, you know, being judgmental. Here I'm comparing. Here, and you just start to kind of be more aware of this whole idea of accepting versus judging. So that would be my number one tip, is if people can just find, you know, 10 minutes, even if it's just 10 minutes before you go to bed or 10 minutes before you get out of bed, that 10 minutes, if you do it consistently, can have a huge impact on your life view. It really can.
More with Britt Ranks after this brief message. I truly can't thank you enough for listening to Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa. Don't forget to subscribe to Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. And also be sure to give us a 5-star rating. We'd really appreciate it, and it would help keep the show going.
Yes, I love that, because we're so busy in the society, and, you know, you have Twitter, which I'm new to, and I'm so overwhelmed. You know, it's just like flying. Everything is just going like a million miles per hour, and how often do we actually get still and just allow ourselves to just be, you know? Like, I love that piece of advice, and it's been doing wonders for me. After reading your book, I've been really, like I said, implementing some of these things, and it's just incredible. Yes, I mean, it's just amazing how there's steps that you can take in your pursuit of happiness that are just so simple, but will make the world of difference in your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing. And so I think another question that comes to mind when I think of the work that you do is depression, because at the other end of happiness is depression, and it's very raw, it's very real for so many, and we even have situations like postpartum depression, and so you have a whole chapter in your book devoted to this issue and or this, you know, situation, and you say that depression is not a lack of gratitude, and I was just like reading this, and I just said out loud, amen, sister. Because I had a miscarriage. I had a miscarriage several years ago, and I had a bout of depression from that situation. And I just remember so many people would say, well, be happy and be thankful for what you have, and be thankful for this, and you should be grateful, and you should be this. And, you know, that doesn't – just because I had those – you know, I was going through this phase of depression and – dealing with these issues doesn't mean that I'm not grateful.
Well, more importantly, it doesn't mean that if you were grateful that you wouldn't have those feelings, you know, or that would fix
right.
it. A life coach friend of mine, we call it, I love him, his name's Tim Bronson, and he calls it gratitude watching. And it's so, so true. Like, you know, people try to, we try to like ignore what we're feeling and say, oh, no, just be grateful, and then it all goes away. And that's just complete and total crap. It doesn't work that way. First of all, one of the, you know, pillars that I stand on, that all of my work stands on, is the idea that feelings have to be felt. That's just all there is. I remember being in therapy, and I was like, okay, finally figured out, like, I'm angry about some stuff. Like, fine, so I'm angry. What do I do with that? Like, we've identified all these feelings I have. Now what? Let's go. How do I get rid of them? It's like, the only thing you could do with feelings is feel them. That's it. That's their job. And at the time, I was like, that is a horrible answer. And I cannot believe you went to school for that. She was so right, because, I mean, that's the whole job of feelings, is to be felt. And that means sadness. That means, you know, grief, all of that. And if you're trying to pretend like you don't have those feelings, and trying to force yourself to, you know, do these gratitude exercises and things, and thinking, oh, then those feelings will just go away. They won't. Feelings do not go away until they've been felt. Mm-hmm. Instead, what happens is they start popping up in unexplainable, impractical, illogical ways all over our life. You know, they will force their way to the surface somehow. and you probably won't have any idea what the heck is going on or where they're connected to, because it doesn't make sense. You know, it's popping out of the wrong hole. But if you feel them, the crazy thing is once you've felt them, eventually they're like, okay, thanks. That's what I wanted. You know, and they kind of, that's their only job. So yeah, no gratitude washing. I do, one of the things I teach people to do is workshops and stuff is a gratitude practice where, you know, you just at the end of the day, you make a list, these are things I'm grateful for. But I always preface that with saying, you know, if there's something getting in the way of you doing this practice that night, if you feel like you can't really say, you know, I'm grateful for this, this, and this because of a feeling you're having, this is about you and your intuition. So be honest and write that. You know, sometimes in my gratitude journal, it'll say, like, Jared is being a real jerk. All right, now that I've said that, I will admit I am grateful for the red wine I had tonight. And, you know, but I can't, it feels dishonest to me sometimes if I don't acknowledge that with the gratitude. Now that's about feelings. And I do want to make it really, really clear that there's feelings, and then there's feeling sad and feeling blue, and then there is depression. And I know that there's mixed ideas on this, but I'm firmly in the camp of depression is a medical mental health condition that needs to be treated by professionals, and it's not something you can just will away. You know, you wouldn't say to somebody with diabetes, well, why don't you just focus on what you're grateful for and think right. that would make it better, you know? I try to explain to people, because people, I get a lot of times that, you know, well, now that you've learned all of this about happiness, do you think you'll stop taking your antidepressants? I'm like, no, because taking my antidepressants is not what makes me happy. My antidepressants make it possible for me to do the things that make me happy. You know, when you're really depressed, making a gratitude list is not going to help you. And getting outside might help you, but chances are you're not going to go outside, you know? So I think that depression is when you're below ground zero, you know, you're in the hole. And sometimes you need, when you're in the hole, you need help just getting to ground level so that you can do all of those other things that we talk about. But yeah, you can't, I mean, you can't function from the hole, you know?
Right.
The hole first.
Yes, and I totally respect that, and I'm so glad that it's addressed in your book. And, you know, I just really, it's like we're all, as mothers, we all are connected in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And I just love learning from moms, especially doing this show. So what's one piece of advice that you would have for mothers in their pursuit of happiness along their journey to happiness?
You know, it comes back to, if I had to boil it down to one thing, it comes back to kind of what I said at the very beginning, which is, you know, be as happy as you want your children to be. You know, sacrificing your own happiness in honor of your children, all you're doing is teaching your children how to sacrifice their happiness later in life. And that, or teaching them that somebody else is going to constantly be sacrificing their happiness for them. Neither one of those things are probably what you really want your kids to be like, you know. So for me, it always comes back to be as happy as I want my kids to be, you know. I want my children to love themselves. I want my children to be competent. I want my children to be kind to others and also to themselves, you know. I want my children to be able to see their faults and see their weaknesses and, you know, have a good balance of I'm okay with this, I still love myself, these are some things I want to work on, but it doesn't mean I'm a bad person. You know, all of those things I want for my children, I have to be that person first. You know, that's the best way, my best shot of getting them to grow up to be happy people is to keep being as happy as I can myself.
Wow, that's incredible. And it's so true. Actions speak louder than words. And I just think that that's a very, very, very valuable, I would even say invaluable piece of advice for moms. And I really thank you for giving us that piece of advice.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. You're welcome. That's, you know, you're right. Mothers are connected. And I think for me, so much of my work always comes back to just, you know, telling moms and women in general, like, it's okay. You're okay. You know, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's the one thing that I think we're getting better at as mothers. You know, as much as the media still always wants to shine a light on any perceived mommy war, I really do mm-hmm. think that we're getting better as mothers and as women at holding each other up and supporting each other. And, you know, I just want to see more and more of that.
Yes, I totally agree. I totally agree with you 100%. And so how can the listeners of Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa, how can they get in touch with you and get access to your resources?
Well, the best way is to go to my website, which is inpursuitofhappiness.net. I was not super marketing savvy when I bought that domain, so it is .net, and everything is there. You can sign up for my newsletter, which is kind of a personal email I send every week with some practical advice or stories or whatever about how to be happier. You can, any social media thing that you're on, you can find me all there. So, yeah, inpursuitofhappiness.net. There's, you can find my book, find the blog, it's all there.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to stay in touch with me by visiting www.deniseinlarosa.com, where you can sign up for my newsletter, get some valuable mommy resources, and giveaways. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Denise in LaRosa, on Facebook, Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa, and or email me at denise@deniseinlarosa.com. You have been listening to Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa. I will leave you with this quote by Britt Reintz. It doesn't matter if you should be happy. What matters is if you are. Thank you for listening.